Welcome to the Disciple Makers Podcast, featuring biblical teaching from Disciple Makers Ministry to college students. As we continue in a series of breakout sessions from the 2015 Disciple Makers Fall Conference, Brian Parker takes the time to address an increasingly prevalent issue for many Christians, busyness. Here is Brian with his talk titled, Reflecting God in the Midst of Busyness.
My name is Brian Parker. Since I don't have Clint to be my MC, a little personal guy, he can't introduce me, but I work for Disciple Makers at Kutztown University and Muhlenberg College somewhere out there. The three people that are attending this session from Muhlenberg. I am happily married to my wife, almost of 5 years, Liz Parker, and you probably saw our little eight-month-old Thaddeus being strolled around this week, and if not, I highly recommend you go meet him. He's very cute. So that is our son. But like I said, my name is Brian. This session is kind of one that's very near and dear to my own heart, one that I found very relevant, this topic of busyness. I recently read a story, this is what it said. There's a woman who came to the United States from a foreign country, and after a few weeks of living in the United States, she started introducing herself to other people as busy. Because she would meet people, and she would often hear, "Hi, nice to meet you. I'm busy." Or "Good, have a nice day. Nice to see you. I'm busy." And so she just kind of assumed it was the normal cultural kind of exchange to tell people that you were busy. That was her experience of at least Western civilization of America. So I don't know, maybe that's an anecdote. I don't know if that's true or not. But I think it really captures the heart of what we're going to talk about today. It captures this idea that there is really this pervasiveness, that busyness has gotten into our life, has gotten into our culture. And I think most of us, probably the reason you're here this morning or this afternoon is not because you didn't like the other three sessions that you could have gone to, but probably because you find busyness as just part of your life. You've almost assumed it as the norm. And I think if you're like me, there's part of you that it's the normal part of life, and yet part of you hates it. If you notice on the top of your outline, we're going to look at page 29. You can flip there now if you'd like. This is what one pastor has to say. He says, "We hate being busy, but we may never hate it enough to change." Friends, this afternoon, as we dive into God's word and look at the topic of busyness, I don't think you and I need to be more convinced that we are busy people. I think we have that one down. I think what we do need to see, though, is why is it that we are so busy? What are the things that fuel our busyness? What are the things that drive us to be such busy people and almost accept it as the normal experience of life? And so we're going to unpack that in our session. This afternoon, we're going to look at how the gospel, what I hope this session does. It's 45 minutes long, but I can't promise you a full cure of your busyness. But my prayer for all of you has been in the weeks leading up to this session and has been recently that you would walk away different people than when you came in, that you would see how the gospel frees us to put our identity and our rest in the person of Jesus, even as life is busy around us. That's what we're going to look at this morning. If you have your packet, I encourage you to open up page 28 and 29. I'm going to pray for our time, and then we're going to dive into the topic of busyness. Let me pray. God, we thank you that we have time in the midst of just a busy life. God, if we're honest, we struggle with busyness, with activity, with just running from one thing to the next, if not physically, God, then mentally. But God, I pray that during our time together, you would show us from your word that we can put our identity, we can put our rest. God, we can lean on the person of Jesus and not buy into this culture and this lifestyle of busyness that culture has set as the norm. God, would you be so kind as to teach us and to transform us even now, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. As you'll see on your outline, there's a few things that I want to share with you this morning. At the very end, you'll see there's some practicals. There's a reason they're last, because this morning, before we get to some of the practicals, I want to show you why we should be concerned more than we are with busyness. Why is this busyness so important to talk about? Why is it such a big deal? In other words, what's the big fuss about busyness? I think the Bible has a lot to say about busyness. We're going to camp out in the passage Luke chapter 10 on page 28. You'll find it there. It's a short one because I know we're busy people, so I kept it short for us. This is what Luke has to say. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. If you have a Bible, you can open up or just follow along on your outline. Luke says this, "Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house, and she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and as she went up to him, and she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" A couple things I want to point out from this passage, if you're not familiar. In this short story involving Jesus, there are three people you really need to know about. The first is Jesus. The second is a woman named Martha. And the third is her sister named Mary. Those are the kind of the three biggies in Luke 10. And notice kind of the context of the story. Verse 38, Jesus says he enters a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And on the surface, you go, that was a kind thing of Martha to do, right? Godly example, welcoming Jesus into her home. But the story continues. Verse 39, "And she," meaning Martha, "had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching." Again, short little story, four verses in length, and you look at Mary, you go, that's kind of cute. Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet, maybe learning some stuff. And this story, it's quaint. It's easy to look at it as this cute little dinner party involving these three little people. But notice in verse 40, this story takes a turn from this cute little dinner party in, I think, what could be an episode of Jerry Springer. Look at what happens. Verse 40, drama ensues. It says, "But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.'" Translation, Martha, as she looks at all that's going around at her, she is like, "Mary, oh no, you don't. I am not cooking all this food and setting the table with the little napkins and the little toothpicks and the appetizers while you lounge around and listen to Jesus. I'm not down with that." And notice what happens. You kind of feel bad for Martha a little bit, because if you have ever had people over to your apartment, maybe you can relate, maybe you have a suite on campus or in your dorm room, as soon as you invite friends over, right, the chips open up, you have a hangout. As soon as the food comes out, people are like, "We're all in," right? People show up, you've never even seen him before. You're like, "I didn't even know that guy was a student. I think he works for the camp. He's just in." Chips. But as soon as kind of the food, like, finishes up and the cleanup time happens, you're like, "Where's everybody? I thought nobody's, you can't find anybody," right? That's kind of the picture that we get in Luke 10, right? Martha is like, "Why is nobody helping me?" And almost, I think we're meant to feel a little bad for Martha, at least on the surface. Like, if somebody would just help Martha, she could get her act together. What's crazy about this story, well, I think it could be an episode in the Jerry Springer Show, is that Jesus sides not with Martha. He sides with Mary. Look at verse 41. It says, "But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken from her.'" See, Jesus here, he not only corrects what Martha is doing, but he actually commends what Mary is doing. Did you see that? In verse 42, and if you read this passage and you are a person who struggles and wrestles with busyness, you just feel like my life is busy, this passage should disturb you. This passage should disturb you. Here's why. Two reasons. You see them on your outline. The first is this. When we allow ourselves to be consumed with busyness, we run from one thing to the next in life. Here's what happens. We enslave ourselves to anxiety and trouble. To anxiety and trouble. I'm just plucking that right from verse 41. Martha, in this story, she was a willing slave to her own busyness. Right? She was distracted, it says in verse 40, by many things. with much serving. In other words, she was worried about all the different details of the dinner, whether the food was going to come out hot enough, whether the dining table cloth was folded the right way, all these things. And Jesus looks at her and says, you're distracted with a lot of things. And you're anxious, and you're worried about things, and you're troubled. And it's tempting to think if Martha, if she could just kind of get through her to-do list here, her dinner party to-do list, life would be smooth sailing. She wouldn't be so stressed out. Does that sound familiar? If I could just get through my 8-page paper that's due this next week, right? Life would be stress-free. Or if I can just make it to Thanksgiving break, then I won't be so anxious. And we tell ourselves those things, and there's some truth in that, but I think what Jesus does in Luke chapter 10, he says that's actually the wrong way to think about our busyness. Because according to Jesus, Jesus says that only one thing is necessary, and it's not getting through your to-do list. One thing is necessary, and here's what it is. It's to delight in, it's to learn from, it's to rest on, it's to trust in the person of Jesus Christ. That's the one thing that's necessary. You almost get the sense, it doesn't tell us in the story, you also have to read between the lines a little bit, but you almost get the sense that if dinner in this story were never to make it to the table, Jesus would have been content. Jesus would have been okay with that. The only person that's stressed out and frustrated in the story is Martha. She's the one who's anxious. She's the one who's troubled over all the things that aren't going right. And friends, this is why I think busyness is so dangerous, because what we see from Martha, from that character in the story, is that when we allow ourselves to buy into this lifestyle of busyness, what we do is we become simultaneously master and slave to our own busyness. We almost take on the role of victim of our own busyness, and we're mastered by it, but we're the ones who master ourselves by our own busyness. And very rarely do we stop to ask the question, why? Why am I so busy? Why do I feel like I need to get all these things done? Why do I feel like I need to go from this thing to the next and be involved with this amount of different clubs on campus? We rarely ask the question, why? Friends, we enslave ourselves to anxiety and trouble. That's the first reason that busyness is so dangerous, but I think there's a reason that's even more dangerous. End of verse 42. Luke shows us that when our lives are consumed by busyness, friends, we miss out on the good portion. We miss out on the good portion. Luke shows us in this passage that when we allow ourselves to be run ragged by activity and relationships, it distracts us from the best thing, from Jesus Christ. He is the good portion. That's the thing that Jesus says will not be taken away from Mary in this passage, verse 42. Jesus is the good portion. And I think what's sad about this story, what's ironic, I think what's often sad in my life and probably your life too, is that even in the name of serving God, we often busy ourselves such that we miss the person of Jesus. Martha, in this story, she's doing all these things for Jesus, right? She welcomed him into her home, and yet at the end of the day, who does she miss? Who does she neglect? She misses the person of Jesus. While Mary, she gains him. She sits at his feet. That's what she's commended for in our passage. Let me ask you a question. If Jesus, it's a hypothetical, but if Jesus were to show up on your campus tomorrow or next week, and he were to offer you a one-hour meeting just with him, undistracted, one-on-one discipleship time in the Cub or the Hub or the Sub, right? Or Seeger's, right? All the places on campus where you meet. If he were to offer you that opportunity, just 1 hour with him, let me ask you, would your schedule even allow for it? I think we'd be tempted to say yes, but honestly, every time we give ourselves to other things that aren't Jesus, right? We give ourselves to being distracted on Facebook, or we do some social activity rather than growing in godly character. What we're saying in essence is no, we would not have time. Is your schedule too busy to delight in the good portion? That's why busyness is so dangerous. Now, If you're logical kind of in mind, maybe you're thinking about this passage or you're reading it for the first time, my guess is that some of you are asking this, is Luke 10 saying that the application is just to stop going to class so that I can listen to Christian sermons all day? Is that what the passage is saying? Because if so, that's awesome. That's not what Luke 10 is saying. Or is Luke 10 saying, right, I should just drop out of college and move to the mountains, just me and my Bible, right? So I could just get one-on-one time with Jesus. Is that what Luke 10 is advocating for me to do? No. I think those solutions, if you were to do that, I don't think they would hit what's causing your busyness in the first place. I think if you move to the mountains, you might get some more fresh air, but I think your busyness would follow you there. You would find a way to fill your schedule with stuff rather than Jesus. That's what Luke 10 is saying. That's what Luke 10 is saying. That's why busyness is so dangerous. Part of what we need to see, gang, is that busyness, yes, it's dangerous, but before we jump to the practicals, we actually have to understand, what is it that causes us to be so busy? Why are we such busy people? It's not our to-do list, so what is it? Well, that's what we're going to talk about next. The quote at the top of your outline, we read the first half of it. This is how it wraps up. We hate being busy, but we may never hate it enough to change. And then Kevin DeYoung goes on to say, the bane of busyness must be fought with stronger stuff. DeYoung goes on to say later in his book, we will not rearrange our priorities unless we really believe that Jesus is the best one. Friends, what we need, even more than a shift in our schedule, is we need a shift in our heart, in our attitude toward the person of Jesus, to believe that he actually is the good portion, right? The best portion, the beautiful one that Joel was talking about this morning, the wise one, the powerful one. Jesus is the best pursuit of our time. He's the good portion, which Luke says will never be taken from us. Everything else will. Everything else will forsake us. Jesus is the only thing that will last. So how do we make this shift? How do we start to understand the causes behind our busyness? I think we look at our own heart. We look at what causes and why it is we're so busy. A couple reasons that I thought of. I think there's two big ones you'll notice. You could probably think of some other ones. Two biggies that I think are the reasons why we're so busy. First is this. We are proud people. The reason we are busy is because our own pride, and as we'll see, it's many cousins or it's many variations. Proverbs 16, verse 5 says that the Lord detests all the proud of heart. And yet the reason I think we're so busy is because we're proud. Let me ask you, is the reason that you're busy because you're so bent on making God's name glorious on campus? Or is it because you're more inclined to make your own name glorious? The Bible says that that's pride, that's a proud heart, trying to build our own kingdom rather than the Lord's. And I think it's the first fast track to busyness. Let me just walk us through what pride looks like in our life. You can fill them in. The first cause, the first form of pride that causes us to be busy is people-pleasing. People-pleasing. You've probably heard this expression before. If not, this is when you say yes to things that you should say no to, or this is when you say no to things that you should say yes to because you are fearful of what other people think of you, right? You say yes or say no because you're more worried about what someone will think of you, that they're going to be sad or they're going to be disappointed with you if you don't do what they want you to do. That's called people-pleasing. I remember back in a few years ago, I was discipling a student on campus, and after a while, we were talking, and it became pretty clear to me that this student, he was just incredibly stressed out. And I said, what's going on, man? What's got you so stressed? And he says, honestly, it's my job on campus. I'm tutoring all these students, and I feel like I've bitten off more than I can chew. And so I said to him, I said, this might be a stupid question. Why don't you go to your boss and just tell him, look, I can't tutor as many students as you want me to. And this was his response. Honestly, I don't think my boss would be very happy if I told him that. This student was more concerned about what his boss thought of him than what the Lord of the universe thought of him. And I don't think you and I are very different. Part of the reason we're so busy is because we are people pleasers. As you guys think about your own life, as if your own struggle with busyness on campus, how much of the activity that you're involved with, of the things that cause you to be busy, is caused by fearing or by giving too much weight to what people think of you? We are busy people because we're people pleasers. That's the first form of pride. Second is this: we're busy because of performance evaluation. Performance evaluation. What do I mean by that? We think too highly of ourselves. We think too highly of our skills, of our influence, of our contribution such that we tell ourselves, you can probably finish the phrase, if I don't do it, nobody will. And we tell ourselves, if I don't do it, it'll never get done. So, right, this is the student on campus, maybe you can relate, who takes on the bulk of a group project, because he or she, they don't trust that the other group members are going to contribute their fair share of the work. So they kind of do all the work for them. That's performance evaluation. That's thinking too highly of themselves and too lowly of other people. Or this is the student, right, who recruits all the people to Bible study on campus because she doesn't believe that her other Bible study leaders are going to help invite other students to the study. Right? If I don't do it, nobody's going to show up. She thinks too highly of herself. And so she fails to delegate to other people. For me, back in college, what this looked like very practically was I lived in an apartment my sophomore year with three other guys, you can imagine. And it didn't take long for the place to just look like a pigsty. And so for me, I would often find myself just cleaning up after everybody. And I'd pick up and I'd make the place tidy. And the reason I did it, outwardly I'd say, because, you know, I'm just more mature than the other people. But inwardly, it came from a heart of pride, because I thought very lowly of my roommates, and I didn't want to have an uncomfortable conversation with them. Like, I don't want there to be conflict, and so I don't want to go there. And so I would just pick up after them. And honestly, it was driven by pride. I thought way too highly of myself and way too lowly of my roommates. That's called pride. That's called performance evaluation. One pastor says it this way. This is so profound. We are only indispensable until we say no. Let me say that again. We are only indispensable until we say no. What that means is that you and I, we think that the world, that everything revolves around us, but the moment we say no, somehow life continues to function. It's an amazing thing. One businessman says it this way: don't sell people short. Don't sell people short. People are smarter than you think. Give them a chance to prove themselves. Learn to delegate to people. So if you're here, particularly if you're an upperclassman or you're a leader in your fellowship, I want to challenge you this afternoon to learn to delegate responsibility to other people in your fellowship. Teach them how to do the things that you don't just do them. Take someone with you. How do you set things up on a Friday night at large group? How do you invite people to Bible study? Take them with you. It'll probably be harder at first, but in the end, it'll lead to more fruitfulness, more influence, and it'll actually make your schedule much less busy. Don't think too highly of yourself. Learn to delegate to other people. Number three, we're proud because of perfectionism. Perfectionism. I think a big part of why many of us are so busy is because we refuse to settle for anything less than perfection. So what does this look like? It looks like this. Rather than taking 4, maybe 5 hours to knock out a paper, which is a good paper, maybe a B, maybe even an A quality paper, people that are perfectionists, right, rather than spend 4 or 5 hours, they spend 8 or 10 or 12 hours on a paper until they're convinced that they're going to get 100%. And what that does is it not only makes your schedule busy, but what it does is it calls into question the perfectionism of Jesus. Because in essence, when we strive for perfection, what we're doing is we're saying, Jesus' perfection was not enough. I need to be perfect. And so we settle for nothing less than perfection. We do it with our grades. I think we do it with our bodies. If you're the kind of person, like, I don't really care about grades, but you're the kind of person who spends a ton of time in the gym, have you ever stopped and considered, why am I spending so many hours in the gym? Is it so that I would have just a healthy body that's going to be strong for years to serve my Lord and Savior? Or is it because I care more of what people think of me, and I want to have the perfect body so people will notice me? It's called perfectionism. And according to the Bible, it's the fast track to be busy. It's a form of pride. Last form is this, pity. Pity. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, so I won't spend long here, but I think if we're honest, a lot of us, we like having a busy schedule, or at least, even if our schedule's not that busy, we like bragging slash complaining about how busy we are. You've been there. So that people will feel bad for us. They'll pity us. You know how you know this is true? Listening to somebody's conversation sometime about somebody who doesn't have much work during finals week. Have you ever heard this conversation, right? They're like, how many finals do you have? They're like, oh, yeah, I have one. It's a take-home quiz. You can feel other people's anger just like descend on said person. What that shows is that we value busyness. And we hate those who aren't busy, some sick kind of odd reason, right? It's a poor form of empathy. But man, if we can get it, we go for it. Right? And so even if we're not busy, we try to make this case for how busy we are. Maybe we really are that busy. But we want people to feel bad for us. We love being pitied. So we play the busy card. Those are forms of pride, I think, that really cause us to be busy, right? It's not just the to-do list. It's the thing that drives the to-do list. If you want some more information on this, I picked this up at the book table. It's a book, Crazy Busy, by Kevin DeYoung. I quoted him earlier. This goes much more into depth about how you can understand some of the causes behind your busyness. I would encourage you guys to pick it up. Actually, I'm going to give this one away after the session, so you can come up and see me if you really want it. Just a number of reasons why we're so busy. Pride, I think, is the big one. That's a big one. But I think also, in addition to pride, I think part of the reason we're so busy is laziness. It's laziness. That's another biggie. And some of you guys are going, wait a second. How is laziness a cause behind busyness? I'm getting some weird looks. Here's how. I think often the way we define or the way we view laziness is the absence of activity or the absence of busyness. I think the Bible would actually define laziness very differently. According to the Bible, here's how it defines laziness. You'll see a proverb on the screen behind me. Proverbs 20, verse 4 says this. A sluggard does not plow in season, so that at harvest time he looks but finds nothing. Let me read that one more time. A sluggard does not plow in season, so that at harvest time he looks but finds nothing. And the picture the Bible gives us of the sluggard, that's just a synonym for someone who's lazy, is this, that a person who's a sluggard, they don't plow in season, right? While everybody's out doing their work, they're planting their seed, they're tilling the soil, they're watering everything, the sluggard is in home kicking his feet back. And in the moment, it seems like the sluggard isn't very busy because he's just relaxing. He's not doing any of the plowing. But did you notice? At harvest time, all of a sudden, the sluggard becomes very busy. It says he looks but finds nothing. The picture you get is that he scrambles. He is searching. He is scrambling. He is looking, but there is no food to be found. So for a season in the beginning, he was not busy, but in the end, it actually leads to more busyness because he's forsaken his work that he should have been doing. I think we can relate to this. Have you ever put off a paper to the last minute? Of course you have. You're college students. Right? You had 4 weeks to work on the thing. You knew about it since the semester started, and for 27 days, you have done nothing. And during those 27 days, life doesn't feel very busy. But man, come that night before the papers due, all of a sudden, you are incredibly busy. Right? You pull the all-nighter, which probably means you have to say no to things that you should be at. Maybe there's a Bible study that night, but you can't go to that because you have to finish the paper. Which means you have to stay up late, which means you're going to probably be tired the next day, so you can't pay attention in class as well as you could have had you gotten a good night's sleep, which means if you carry that out for a number of days in a row, you're probably going to get sick eventually, which is going to take you out, which is only going to put you further behind. You see how busyness, laziness now actually leads to busyness later. That's the picture that we get in the Bible, how laziness is actually a cause of busyness. It's subtle, but man, it is dangerous. Or maybe for you, right, it's October, and as you think about the summer, about internships and jobs and how you're going to spend your time this summer, you're like, I got time, right? That's months away. And so now you choose to do nothing rather than apply and research all the different opportunities for the summer. You put it off, But guess what? May and June are going to be here way before you know it. And what might feel like you're not busy now will feel crazy busy later because you're going to be scrambling looking for a job or how to plug yourself into the summer. Or even in the time leading up to it, you have that kind of anxious thought in the back of your head, like, I know I should be doing something, and your energy is just consumed by not doing it even though you know you should. Right? That's busyness. Emotional busyness. Spiritual busyness. It's caused by laziness. But I think there's more subtle forms of laziness. Another proverb, Proverbs 24, verse 27 says this. This is much more subtle. Finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. So the first proverb showed us that we can be lazy by doing nothing, right? That's the sluggard who neglects plowing his field. But this proverb says that we can actually be busy by doing the wrong things. So we can be busy by having a life filled with activity, but by doing the right things at the wrong time, right? Neglecting the most important things. It's actually a form of laziness. One of the ways this plays out for me, maybe you can relate, is that anytime I have a conversation that I know is just going to be uncomfortable or awkward, or I'm just not looking forward to it, rather than call the person or meet up with them and just do it and get it over with, I distract myself with like 15 other things. Instead of calling the person, I answer email, I organize my desk for like 3 times in the same day. That paperclip is out of place. Right? I update Facebook, I do all these other things. It looks like outwardly I'm very busy, but inwardly I'm being very lazy because I'm putting off the one thing that actually has to get done. That's what the proverb says. It says there's an order to our work. Finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. There's an appropriate prioritization to how we approach our work, to how we approach relationships in life. And if we get that order wrong, it can certainly lead to laziness. It can actually lead to much busyness. So we can be busy by being lazy. There's a quote. Love this quote at the side of your outline, page 28, next to Luke 10. This is Alexander McLaren. He was a Scottish minister in the 1800s, you know, before life got really busy. And this is what he had to say. He says, "No unwelcome tasks become any less unwelcome by putting them off until tomorrow. It is only when they are behind us and done that we begin to find that there is a sweetness to be tasted afterwards, and that the remembrance of unwelcome duties unhesitatingly done is welcome and present. Accomplished, they are full of blessing, and there is a smile on our face as they leave us. Undone, they stand threatening and disturbing our tranquility and hindering our communion with God. If there be lying before you any bit of work from which you shrink, go straight up to it and do it at once. The only way to get rid of it is to do it." I think McLaren was onto something. I think he was onto something. You know, laziness feels restful for a moment, but there's a deception, there's a deceit that's wrapped up in it, that it actually leads to busyness, that it leads to anxiety and trouble, as we looked at earlier, later down the road. So the question is, How do we set ourselves up? How do we approach life in such a way that does what McLaren says here? How do we overcome the mountain of busyness in our life? How do we start to make that shift? I think the only way we make that shift is by looking to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because I think if we short-circuit the gospel, here's what happens. You could actually walk out of this room being a better busy person, if that makes sense. Right? That would be like giving a compulsive liar personality training on how to better read people in conversations, that he could be a better liar. I don't even know if there is such a thing. That would defeat the purpose. Right? The goal here is not to add more to your already hectic schedule, not to be better and effective at being busy. The goal is to rest on the person of Jesus. This is why Jesus is the only solution to our busyness. If you're not familiar with what we call the gospel, you've probably heard that term before. The gospel, it's a biblical term. Let me just explain it. If you've heard it before, let this be a good reminder. If you've never heard it, this is what the gospel says. This is why this is the solution to our busyness. Here's what the gospel says. It teaches us that we were created by God, for God, to live for him and his kingdom. But in our sin, we have chosen to love ourselves rather than God, to make a name for ourselves rather than to worship his. And because of that, because of our sin, we have been separated eternally from all of God and his goodness forever. But rather than God leave us in that state, rather than leave us out, separated from God, God sent his only son, Jesus Christ, to live the perfect life that you and I should have lived, and to die the death that we deserve to die because of our sin. And anyone who trusts in that, anyone who stakes their life on the person of Jesus in his completed work for us, is forever forgiven, is forever loved, is forever welcomed into God's eternal kingdom. And you can't earn that. You can't work for that. You can't lose it. All you can do is humbly accept it. That's the gospel. That's the solution to our busyness. And you go, how is that the only solution to our busyness? Because maybe the gospel, as you've heard it explained, or you've heard that word just a number of times, maybe that idea seems trite or just kind of seems cliche. Let me unpack very briefly how the gospel is the solution to our busyness. Here's how the gospel frees us from busyness. Because friends, if you understand the gospel, no longer do you need to strive after building a resume for yourself. Why? Because the gospel promises us that we have a better name written in heaven. And it can't be taken from us. It can't be tarnished. It is there forever. God has written it. So you don't need to build up your own resume or your own name. It's already been written for you. Gospel tells us that you don't have to be involved in 16 different clubs on campus. You don't have to be at every social gathering because you fear missing out. Why don't you have to fear those things? Because the gospel says that being a Christian, you have not experienced the best that is yet to come. One day you will see face to face God Almighty, the person that we're talking about, this whole conference, behold our God. You will meet your Creator. Friends, if you are a Christian, you will never miss out. So you don't need to fear missing out on campus. It means that you can stop trying to be perfect. You can be content with just working hard. Why? Because Jesus Christ has already completed the perfect work on your behalf. I put two scriptures there in your outline. John chapter 17 and John chapter 19 says this. This is Jesus, I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work that you gave me to do. This is Jesus speaking to his Father. And then in John 19, he says, when he had received the drink, Jesus says, it is finished. In other words, the perfect work has already been done. You cannot add to that. You cannot take away from it. Very practically, what that means is you don't have to freak out when you get a C on your exam. Or if C is an ideal grade, you don't have to freak out if you fail the exam. Because you already have Jesus' report card, right? He has completed the only necessary work when he saved you from death itself. I think what this also means is that you have all the reasons, friend, in the world to prioritize investing in the person and in your relationship with Jesus Christ. Some of you guys went to the missions workshop that Matt Geiger led. He did a great job. Part of what motivates us to have a heart for the nations and for God's glory is to realize that Jesus really is the good portion, that he is the best thing that we can pursue with our time. Grades will be forgotten. Your body, as attractive as all of you guys are, will one day succumb to injury and wrinkle and old age. Right? Accomplishments on the sports field that you take so much pride in, they will be forgotten. They will fade. Jesus Christ and his glory is the only thing that will last. So as you choose to invest your time in growing in godly character, becoming more like Jesus, and in sharing the gospel with other people, man, talk about a lasting thing. That's what will last forever. That is motivation to pursue the good portion. That's why the gospel is the solution to our busyness. And honestly, we have some more time. I think we could just end there. That alone would be enough to send us out and to go, Jesus, would you free me from this lifestyle, from this enslavement of busyness that I've given myself to. I almost hesitate a little bit to end on practicals for our session because I don't want us to walk away thinking if I just do these next few things, you know, I can safeguard myself against busyness. I hope you'll see that these practicals, we're going to talk about them for a few minutes, that they are couched, that they are motivated, that they are only possible in as much as we understand the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what enables us to actually have the power to do these practicals. Because if I just say do these, we're not going to have any motivation or power to actually do them. So with that in mind, let me just walk through what are some things, though, that we can do to attack our busyness. I thought of seven. You could probably think of seven more. I've just found these to be very helpful. So why don't we end our time with some practicals as we go out. First practical is this. Tackle the most important thing first. Tackle the most important thing first. That's, you notice I put that one first for a reason. So you don't forget it. Tackle the most important thing first. Seems easy to do. Honestly, I think this is probably one of the most helpful things as you think about all that God has given you in terms of classes and sports and relationships and responsibility. If we learn just to do the one thing that is necessary, it'll free us up from being busy, right? Because often we give ourselves to all these trivial things that are urgent, but they're actually not very important. And if you're like, I don't know what the most important thing for me to do is in the day-to-day, here's how you know. It's the thing that you most readily avoid. It's probably the most important thing that you should be doing. Or if you're a to-do list maker like me, it's the thing that keeps winding up week after week on your to-do list. It kind of just carries over because it's never actually getting done. That's the most important thing. Tackle that thing first. Even if you don't finish it all in one sitting, just taking a chunk out of it, man, that will free you up more than doing a bunch of other things that aren't that important. So tackle the most important thing first. Number two, create a schedule each week. Create a schedule each week. Practical number one assumes that you have some sort of knowledge of what actually needs to get done each week. Don't be one of those kind of people. Maybe some of you guys are like this. You kind of rely on the mental schedule. You know what I'm talking about? You're like, I kind of just fly by the seat of my pants. Like, I just intuitively know what I'm supposed to do this week. If you do that, there is no quicker way to being a busy person who tackles things that aren't that important. Right? Because you don't have a sense of what actually is the priority. I would encourage you, create a schedule each week. One of the things I do is I sit down every Sunday evening for about 10, 15 minutes at most, and I just break out my iCal and I write down blocks of time, what needs to get done this week. And I try to carve out different times that I can do it. It's so helpful. Because when Monday morning comes, I don't have to think about, what am I supposed to do? I can just go. Create a schedule. Here's a few tips as you create a schedule. One, make sure your schedule is portable. In other words, make sure you have some way of knowing what your schedule is when you're not in your room. So whether that's on your phone, whether that's in a day planner or something, make sure it's portable. Because if it's not, it's useless. You can write it down, but if it's in your room and you don't remember, it's not going to do you any good. Make sure it's portable. Another tip for your schedule, create margin in your schedule. Create margin. What I mean by that is as you create your schedule, don't have things that butt right up against each other. Create flex time. So you have class, and then you have some meeting set up with a person. You know, have 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes where there's flex time because honestly, no day ever goes according to plan. Create margin in it. I think it'll even open up opportunities to minister to other people because now you'll be aware of you're not running around like a crazy madman. You go, wait, there's people around me. Create margin. I think lastly, just another tip when it comes to scheduling, let someone else look at your schedule. Let somebody else look at your schedule. I think often we look at ourselves, we think we are so objective in how we use our time. I think we are the most objective to how we use our time. Very practically, one of the ways that I've found this to be helpful, my wife Liz knows my schedule most of the time, and so she is very quick to call me out. She's like, babe, why are you cutting the grass right now when you have a sermon outline due tomorrow? And I'm like, she's so wise. She's like, okay, it's just do it. Like, the grass can wait. Let somebody else see your schedule. If you're not sure who, let your staff worker see it. Let somebody in your fellowship see it, but don't just kind of go as the only one who looks at it. Let somebody else see it. Related to scheduling, number three, remember the 80-20 rule. Remember the 80-20 rule. You're like, what is that? 80-20 rule basically says this. In most areas of life, you get about 80% of the stuff done in about 20% of the time that you give it. And it takes about 80% of the time to get the other 20% done. Does that make sense? Another way to say it is this. Things will often take as much time as you give them. So if you let yourself study for that biology exam and you give yourself 12 hours to study for it, guess how long it's going to take? 12 hours. Right? On a Saturday night, if you're hanging out with friends and even in the fellowship and you let yourself stay up till 3 in the morning hanging out, guess how long you're going to hang out with them? I don't know how when you started, but till 3 in the morning, right? Things take as long as you give them. The 80-20 rule, part of what it says is that you know, if you're doing a paper, you're studying for a test, you can probably get to like a B-plus quality work in about 20, 30% of the time. That extra little icing on top, that'll take the bulk of your time. So something to be aware of. Don't let yourself be consumed. Very practically, one way to kind of fight against this is decide beforehand how much time you're going to give something. So as you schedule, you go, you know what? I'm only going to give this test 5 hours to study for. After that, I'm done. I'm moving on to the next thing. I'm only going to hang out with this person for 2 hours. After that, I got to go to the next thing, right? You decide beforehand how to use your schedule. You are not a victim of your schedule. You're a steward of it. That God has called you and entrusted you to be a good steward over. Number four is this. Don't be strangled by your screen. Don't be strangled by your screen. What I mean, most of you, we live in the 21st century. You have some type of smartphone. If you don't, you probably have a computer. I think one of the quickest and easiest ways that we waste away time is we diddle it away on our iPhones, or we diddle away on just doing mindless things. Right, we look at Pinterest and Facebook and Instagram. And honestly, if I had to guess, I would guess we waste away about 1 to 2 hours a day looking at pointless and trivial things. That means in any given year, we waste 365 to 730 hours of our time. That's 4 weeks of time. It's a month. A month of your time. That's a conservative estimate, I think. I think we waste time so much on our phone. How does this look like practically? What do we do such that we don't waste so much time? Learn to put your phone down. Very practically, stop sleeping with your phone. Literally. Like, don't take your phone to bed. I know it's easy, it's convenient, your outlet's there. You probably use it as an alarm clock like I often do. Man, buy a traditional alarm clock if you have to. They do exist. Or if you don't want to buy the alarm clock, put the phone on the other side of the room. You don't have to answer the person's text at 1 a.m. You should be sleeping anyway. Right? Learn to divorce yourself from your phone. One of the ways that Liz and I have tried to do this in our home, we're not perfect at it, is at mealtime, we put our phones in a basket such that they're not on the table beside us. Because guess what? If I'm eating my food and my phone's there and it goes off, I don't care what Liz is telling me, my mind, sadly, goes toward my phone. So we just physically remove our phone and put it elsewhere. Learn to divorce yourself from your screen. Don't be strangled by it. Another practical you can try is just take a screen Sabbath. Right? Take a day and just leave your phone in your room. You're like, but what if? It's all right, the world won't end. People need to get in touch with you. They will. Or keep it on you. Put it on airplane mode. I think there's a setting you can still get emergency calls. Learn to take a screen Sabbath. Man, if you do that, you'll find life actually has much more time than you initially thought. Don't be strangled by your screen. Number five, this one doesn't need explanation, I don't think, but learn to say no to good things. Learn to say no to good things. So when someone asks you to do something that you know you probably shouldn't take on, because remember, you've already set your priorities, you have a schedule, you have an idea of what you should be using your time for, and they say, hey, could you just do this one thing for... Certainly, pray about it, use wisdom if it's an opportunity to serve. But rather than just say yes, learn to say no. You can very graciously look them in the eyes, but very firmly say, no, thank you, I can't do it. Here's what a friend told me a couple years ago, so helpful. You are not obligated to give people an explanation for why you say no. You actually don't have to. Not saying you can't, but you can say no. We would be much less busy people if we learned to say no more often. Number six, find activities that are truly restful. Find activities that are truly restful. I think one of the reasons, even if our schedule's not that busy, often why we're so tired and so stressed is because even though we can find free time during the week, I think most of us, we haven't learned to find what's actually restful for us. And so we kind of just, we do what's most convenient. You know, so on a Saturday afternoon, maybe you watch the college football game and it's 3 hours long, and you walk away from it and you go, I feel more tired than when I started watching the thing. Why is that? Because maybe watching a college football game isn't actually restful for you, right? It's what you've always done, but it doesn't bring you a sense of re-energy. It doesn't re-energize you. Learn to find what's restful. For Liz and I, one of the things we found, it's so easy to want to pop in a red box. It's like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Let's just get a red box. And we kind of just settle for that. We found that just getting outside, now we have an eight-month-old now, so it gets a little trickier, but we take him for a walk. And we just stroll around the neighborhood, and it is so restful just to get fresh air, to get undistracted time to talk to one another. And we kind of had to figure that out because it actually took work to figure that out, that would be restful for us. So do the hard work of finding out what's restful for you. But man, if you figure that out, man, it'd be restful. It'll free you up. It'll energize you to actually approach your work much more diligently. If you're not sure where to start, just try something. Break outside the norm, right? Go for a walk. Go to a coffee shop near campus you've never tried before. Invite a friend. Listen to a type of music that you're like, I don't even know if this will be restful. Let me try it. Or call a friend up. Go play catch. Do something that you wouldn't typically do. Don't settle for something vanilla just because you've always done it. Find something that's truly restful. You're not sure what to do? Ask somebody. What do you do to rest? How do you kind of re-energize and see what they say? Last thing is this. As we wrap up, number 7, look for ways to serve others. Look for ways to serve others. You know, if you read the Bible, you'll find pretty quickly this is not only Jesus' second greatest commandment, right? Serve and love others, love God and love others. I think it's a way that frees us from the rat race of busyness. Why is that? Because if you struggle with busyness, part of it could be because you're so consumed, you're so concerned with your own kingdom, your own mini empire that you're trying to build, such that you're blind to other people around you. And it might feel initially like, man, but if I serve others, I feel like that'll only make my schedule busier. Like you're asking me to add one more thing to my already hectic life. How is that going to free me up? I think this is how it frees you up. If you've ever been on a missions trip before, if you've ever taken time to serve those who are maybe less fortunate than you, something counterintuitive happens, doesn't it? You unplug from life, and all of a sudden, you're more concerned about others' needs, and all of a sudden, you're not so consumed about that last-minute cramming you have to do for the chem test on Tuesday, because you're just taken in by helping others, by seeing their needs, by talking to them, by loving them. And it actually brings a sense of joy and rest and delight that you didn't have when you were in the library consumed with your own stuff. Maybe there's a reason that Jesus, later on in the Gospels, he says this, that when we try to save our life, we actually lose it. But if we lose our lives for his sake and for the gospel, in other words, by loving him and by loving others, by serving others, we actually find our life and we gain life. Very practically, if you want a to-do tomorrow morning, I think it's going to be mentioned tonight, there is an informational meeting about some upcoming missions trips that Disciple Makers is offering this summer. I would encourage you, if you're looking for a way to serve, go to that meeting. Find out how you can serve others. I think your life will be much more restful and less hectic as you do that. Those are some practicals. I hope, friends, we're out of time, but I hope you see how much of a big deal busyness really is. It's not something that just, I'll kind of figure it out tomorrow. The Bible says that it actually has the power to rob us of joy and to distract us from Jesus Christ himself. But what I want to tell you as you leave is that you are not a victim to your own busyness. God has given you the way out. He has given you the power to shift your life, to overcome your busyness, to pursue him as your good portion, such that all the things in life that keep you busy, you can start to pursue with a sense of delight, with a sense where you're not anxious or stressed out anymore, even if the stuff of life doesn't decrease. That's the promise that we have in the gospel. That's the stronger stuff on the top of your outline, as DeYoung mentions, the stronger stuff, the only stuff that we can overcome busyness by as we pursue the good portion, as we believe the gospel. Friends, don't consume the drink that culture gives us, saying that busyness is the norm. It's not. It's the way to an anxious and troubled life. Jesus offers us the opportunity to drink deeply of him. And friends, if you do that, yes, you might have to fight against the current of busyness for the rest of your life. But man, you can start to make progress such that you will more and more find your rest and your identity and your delight in him. That's the promise that he offers in the gospel. Let me pray. God, we thank you that you are our good portion. God, you are not unaware of all the things that we are part of. God, the things that take our time. Many of these things, God, you have called us to do. And God, we trust that you're not calling us just to abandon things flat out, but to trust you in the midst of them, to seek you as our priority. God, to give you glory in all the things that we do. God, I pray that you would more and more free us from the rat race of busyness that we allow ourselves to be consumed by. God, would you give us the wisdom to know what to say no to? Would you give us more of a delight and a love for why to say yes to you, that you are truly the good portion? God, would you make us more and more people who approach life not with a spirit of being tarried or being busy, but by being at rest? We ask in Jesus' name, amen.
You've been listening to teaching from Disciple Makers. To learn more about Disciple Makers, check out our website at www.dm.org. Follow us on Twitter at Disciple Makers, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Makers. Disciple Makers, reaching the campus, reaching the world.